From the studios of Wavefront Audio Visual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 62 of Little Brother for November 27th, 2021. Stay tuned, Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started! The British government has enacted a new law to protect the privacy of users of smart devices. The Product Security and Telecommunications Infrastructure Bill, or PSTI, is intended to ensure that internet-connected consumer electronics are secure against cyber attacks, places limits on the use of trackers, and establishes safety requirements. The law also establishes a regulation and enforcement structure with fines that may add up to as much as £10 million or approximately $13 million, or alternatively, may be levied at up to 4% of the company's global revenue for failure to comply with the regulation. It is not clear whether or not the regulations will have any impact on the DIY or modder community, or if it will have any impact on the right to repair. As the UK is no longer part of the European Union, EU regulations will have no impact on the implementation of this bill, whether for good or not. Sticking with the UK for a moment, on Thursday, the Department for Transport website began showing porn on a page that would normally show charts and statistics. Surprising absolutely no IT workers, the problem finds its origin in DNS. The department had an Amazon S3 bucket in which much of the relevant content was located and which they decommissioned. Unfortunately, when they did so, they did not update the DNS records accordingly. Another party was able to create a new instance in place of the existing address, and voila, porn appears on the DFT website. As of Friday, the site has been taken offline, presumably pending getting the back end sorted. A vulnerability that Microsoft believed it had fixed appears not to have been fixed. I spoke about this vulnerability in episode 49, so we're talking about something that's gone on for a little bit now. The vulnerability enables users with vanilla privileges to gain administrator-level access over their computers, and it impacts all current versions of Windows. And it would appear that patching is unlikely to help. Well, perhaps here's the solution. The German state of Schleswig-Holstein has plans to abandon Microsoft products entirely. On the 18th, Digital Minister Jan-Philipp Albrecht announced plans for the next several years that by the end of calendar year 2026, the roughly 25,000 desktop computers used in the state government will be converted to Linux, replacing Microsoft Office with LibreOffice. There is little information available regarding the state's choice of Linux distribution, although SUSE would seem to be a fitting choice, or how they will be managing the conversion of more complex documents produced by power users. Cosmetics company Lush have elected to abandon social media as part of their marketing strategy, citing concerns over the effect of social media on teen health. The concerns in question were raised by research straight from the source, Meta Inc., formerly known as Facebook, and the parent company of Facebook and Instagram, amongst other platforms. Lush CEO Mark Constantine says that he's happy to bear the potential loss, which he estimates to be approximately 10 million British pounds, or about 13 million US dollars, to take this stand. It's worth noting that this is not the first time that Lush have quit social media in one capacity or another, having quit Facebook and Instagram both in 2019 and again in 2020, only to return. Time will tell. The Department of the Treasury, Federal Reserve, and the FDIC have issued new regulations requiring that financial institutions inform the government of any data breaches no more than 36 hours after discovery. Per the documentation posted by the FDIC, quote, "Under the final rule, a banking organization's primary federal regulator must receive this notification as soon as possible and no later than 36 hours after the banking organization determines that a notification event has occurred. This requirement will help promote early awareness of emerging threats to banking organizations and the broader financial system," end quote. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. And you know what that music means. It's time for another episode of Who Got Pwned This Week? The big news in pwnage this week is GoDaddy. On Monday, GoDaddy filed a disclosure to the Securities and Exchange Commission revealing that they had been pwned. The disclosure states that they discovered unauthorized access to their systems on Wednesday the 17th. The access was primarily targeting GoDaddy's managed WordPress hosting environment. GoDaddy haven't revealed any information about the intents or motives of the attackers. However, they say that up to 1.2 million active and inactive customers could have been compromised, and that usernames and passwords, sometimes including administrative ones, were exposed in the breach. In some cases, the exposure also included private SSL keys. We are not aware of any leaks or ransom demands. The New York Civil Liberties Union, or NYCLU, are expressing concerns about computer hardware issued to students in the state during the pandemic to assist with remote learning. The problem stems from the use of the GoGuardian software, which is used to track and control the usage of the devices on which it is installed, and it can remotely monitor any such device when they're powered on, including the ability to activate the cameras and microphones on them. Now, advice that I've given to many people in many contexts many times is that computers that you do not own and do not control are not to be trusted. Usually, I suggest this advice in regards to employer-owned computers, but really, computers that are owned and issued by school districts are no less important. They deserve no less scrutiny. After all, if you're a student, that's your job description. Effectively, this is an employer-owned computer. Unfortunately, we have a double whammy here. The first half of the double whammy is that these devices are being issued to kids. Love them though we do, the important thing to understand about kids is that they are not typically endowed with wisdom. Kids make bad choices. That's why adults are supposed to guide them, so that they can learn to make good choices. For example, when my son came home with an Alexa device that he'd won at Dave & Buster's, I told him that under no circumstances was he to put it online. He basically had there an expensive, though admittedly very nice-sounding, Bluetooth speaker. Now, I monitor my network very zealously. I know for a fact he didn't hook it up. We can tell kids what to do, we can tell them what not to do, but it doesn't mean that they're going to do it. It doesn't mean that they don't understand what they've been told, just that they don't understand why it's important. If we tell our kids to keep their private business off of school-owned computers and to make sure that the computers are powered off when they're not using them, you can bet at least some of the kids are not going to follow through and may even try to hide it from their parents. This is unfortunate because it puts a gaping hole in the security of our homes. The second half of the double whammy concerns what kids get issued this hardware. The answer is obvious, isn't it? It's the poor kids. Poor kids can't afford computers of their own, so the school issues them. This is where the Go Guardian problem becomes a big problem. It's all too easy to say, well, just don't use it for personal purposes, but if you actively don't have the equipment for you to use yourself for personal purposes, the temptation's always going to be there to use the equipment that you shouldn't be using for personal purposes, especially with kids. Now, last year there was a controversy in Chicago involving the Go Guardian software when it was discovered that it was giving teachers the ability to remotely activate the cameras on student machines. That ability wasn't deliberately activated, it was there by default, but that doesn't change the fact that it was there and that the teachers were able to figure out how to do it. Needless to say, it was removed when it was discovered and brought to the attention of the school board by angry parents. Rightfully angry parents, I might add. The New York City public schools have not made public the abilities that they've purchased from Go Guardian, or how and when they might use them. The NYCLU have issued a Freedom of Information request to the school district to try to liberate some facts on the matter. Digital asset exchange Kraken has an active security lab. In a recent blog post, the researchers posted a technique that can be used to reproduce a serviceable copy of a fingerprint at a cost of about $5. The technique begins by lifting a copy of the fingerprint to be abused from whatever's available. Dusting for fingerprints is child's play, literally. This was a skill I personally had when I was about 9 years old. And once the print can be made visible, the rest is still pretty easy. Once the image of the print has been recovered, it needs to be digitized, which can be done most easily by snapping a photo of it with a phone. The snapshot should then be adjusted using the image manipulation tool of your choice. I personally would use GIMP, however the research lab used Photoshop, in order to convert it to a reasonable quality monochrome image. But most importantly, this needs to be a negative. That is to say, the raised parts of the finger that produced the print need to be light colored in this image. Next, the monochrome image is printed on an acetate sheet, the sort that used to be used with overhead projectors, using a laser printer. The toner that's deposited on the acetate produces a low-profile raised image, essentially a 3D model of the inverse of the fingertip patterns that produced the original print. Finally, a few drops of white glue are put on the acetate and allowed to dry. When that glue is peeled off the acetate, it contains a viable replica of the original fingerprint. And you can use that replica to unlock computers, phones, or other devices that are keyed to the fingerprint that you replicated. The takeaway is this: fingerprints are a poor way to secure your devices. Convenient though it is, just don't do it. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fongaboo and the crowd at Helix for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Special thanks to Fongaboo and Knight Rider 007 and Azrael for bringing stories to my attention. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pwnt music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. And our theme music is Around Chaos by Heatseeker. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next week when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Stay safe and be well.